This is what you examined this weekend. Wednesday, MSEB 100. I guess it is material science building.
We must have shown 15 minutes earlier.
I guess. I have to check that.
Okay.
I have to double check. I think it is like
that. I'll email you.
Yeah. Jeff, you have a question?
No.
Right there, okay. Alright. But not this building, the next building. Yeah. All right, so, but then the final exam is in 151 Everett, okay? The other place where we took our exam is over the Taeb's place of the final exam, which is going to take place on Saturday, that week after the classes are over, Saturday 1 to 3, okay? All right, so we are looking at bounce diagrams. And there is a homework related to bounce diagrams that due today?
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Today is my office hours day, yes. Tomorrow is your homework date, and today is my office hours date. Yes. Okay, so let's go back to our first example once again. In this is the circuit that has a transmission line that is 900 meters long. Speed of light, C, is the propagation velocity. At this speed of light, 1 microsecond corresponds to 300 meter travel distance. That's well understood. And this is terminated with a load resistance that is twice the characteristic impedance of the line, and the Thevenin resistance is the same as the characteristic impedance of the line. We are not telling you what this characteristic impedance is, but you can think of it 50 ohms, unless otherwise, typically it's going to be 50. It doesn't matter in this problem, all right? So what matters is first we construct the bounce diagram. For the bounce diagram, we need the injection coefficient. Here's the injection coefficient. This is the voltage division rule. You use the characteristic impedance as a surge impedance. Whatever happens at the initial moment, there is an initial response, and Z0 plays a role there. In the long term, the input impedance will, we have to tell you how it changes, okay? That depends on whether it's an AC case, etc. That's something that we haven't looked at. But in starting a bounce diagram, you need the surge impedance, and surge impedance is the characteristic impedance. So voltage division, Z0 over Zg plus Z0 gives you a 1/2 factor, which means that 1/2 of the input voltage shows up as the first traveling impulse. We are first generating the impulse response, and after the impulse response is figured out, we can get the actual response of the system to the actual input signal very easily. In this case, the actual input signal is a sine omega t ut, where omega is given as omega divided by 2 pi is given as 1 megahertz. Okay? Any questions here? All right, so then, also the transit time is 3 microseconds, and twice transit time is 6 microseconds. 2L over E is 6 microseconds. And then there is a load end reflection coefficient, which is RL minus Z0 divided by RL plus Z0. And that works out to be 1/3, okay? This is why on the bounce diagram, I have the coefficients 1/2 and 1/6 showing up. 1/2 injection coefficient, 1/6 is that multiplied now by the reflection coefficient, because the reflection takes place at the load. 1/3 times 1/2 is 1/6. And then there is no more bounce, because the load, the source impedance is the same as the impedance of the characteristic impedance of the line. Therefore, the source end, or the generator end, reflection coefficient is equal to 0. So I multiply 1/6 with 0. Therefore, I don't have to bother writing any more arrows. That's it. Okay? So with such a short balance diagram, you have a short expression for the impulse response. There we go. Okay, 1/2 multiplying traveling impulse from left to right. Okay, plus 1/6 traveling in the opposite direction, and therefore you have t plus z over b rather than t minus zero, and then you have this anchoring factor, which is the full travel time. Right, Jason? You remember all that? This is the procedure, more or less, okay? So then, if you convolve this with the input function, it's very easy convolution. It's simply replacing the delta with the function that is involved, because that's the nature of delta convolution. So we have this full expression in terms of two delayed sine functions with unit step modulating it. This is actually, as I have pointed out at the end of last lecture, the movie that I made, right? That animation. If we go back to the animation, somewhere here. Bounce diagrams, bouncing sign. Yeah, one of these. The one that is not full reflected, but partially reflected one. Our reflection coefficient was what? 1/3? Yeah, so that's what it is. And then, if you watch this over and over again, you see that it starts afresh, right? So let's start this again. It starts fresh. It reflects. Reflected wave travels back. And then no change anymore. When the reflected wave travels back and hits the generator, there is no more second bound. That's our bounce diagram had only two arrows on it. That's it. All right, so that's it. Now we understand how this was done. Okay. Good enough. Any questions about this example? So the next example. In the next example, here we have our circuit. 100 ohm load resistance, 50 ohm characteristic impedance. We have a unit step input with no generator resistance. Okay, it's an ideal resistance. Internal resistance of this generator is equal to zero. Okay, that can be used in getting the reflection coefficient at the generator end. R sub g is equal to zero. And that's why gamma sub g works out to be minus one. Okay, that is why it is minus one. And then on this side, we have a load reflection coefficient 1/3, and injection coefficient is 1. Everything in the unit step makes it to the line. There is nothing to share between the surge impedance and the internal impedance. There is no internal impedance. But still, it's best to think of this as not a U of T, but delta of T, just for the simplicity of envisioning how a bounce diagram is generated. Okay. And ultimately, the problem is calling for plot V voltage as a function of time at 1200 meters. The full length of this transmission line, on the other hand, is 2400 meters. So we want to see halfway point how the voltage changes as a function of time. There's going to be no voltage until the first the wavefront that has been applied at t equals 0 comes and passes you by. After that, you will see some voltage. And then it will change again when the bounced wave comes back and passes you again, okay? And the signal that comes and hits you first is a unit step. So there will be plateaus in this case, okay? And there will be changes. The picture is, it's gonna eventually become the picture that you see right over here on the bottom, okay? But again, start by imagining impulses traveling. And then you'll exchange those impulses with the unit step if you wish. Any questions about the construction of the diagram? The travel time, in this case, is 8 microseconds. That's over 2400 meter long transmission line. That's exactly what this is. 3 times 8 is 24. So twice that makes it 16. The full trip, double trip is 16. Okay, so since I am interested in the voltage response at the halfway point, I'm sort of like interested in the impulse response that I would see at the halfway point, right? I want to sort of like identify delta there. If I add all those deltas with the right shifts, time shifts, and the right weights in front of them, then I will just simply change those deltas in U of t, and I will be done. That's how I solve the problem. Okay. All right. So here's my voltage delta expression. The first delta function comes and passes me by as I'm sitting at the halfway point at 4 microseconds, because it's going to take 8 microseconds all the way to the end, and at halfway point it's just 4 microseconds. So I have a unit amplitude delta of t minus 4 sitting there. That t is measured in 4 microsecond units, so I don't put the units there. Okay, and then there I will wait another 8 microseconds for that delta function, which are just passing me by, go reflect and come back. Okay, that's going to take 8 microseconds. So I'm going to have a delta of t minus 12, weighted appropriately, and the weight on that should be the reflection coefficient on the load side. And then I will wait another 8 microseconds, and that will take me to 20 microseconds, and that's the third one. And the weight of that is the previous weight times the reflection coefficient at the generator end, which is minus 1. That's why I am having a flip of sign there. And all this is for the voltage, okay? And in this way, I continue, and I have my entire delta series. You see that the coefficients are going down, down, down. Okay, if I have more and more, it's going to down. Because of that, okay, things are going to converge. Down the line, there's going to be all these deltas that are delayed very much, but their amplitude is almost peanuts, and I ignore them. Okay, ignoring that sort of like amounts to constructing the figure that we have here, and observing as t is going to infinity, I know where I'm going. I'm stuck there. It's converging. Any questions? So that's it. So I then flip around all the deltas into U of t's, and have this figure. Questions? No questions, because people understand this usually. So it seems like I am approaching to a unity. As t goes to infinity, voltage is going to be 1. Okay? And that is also consistent with something we said at the end of last lecture, towards the end. Because the response is settling down to DC steady state, as t goes to infinity, this is a DC steady state problem. And DC steady state means signal frequency is 0. Signal frequency 0 means the length, wavelength, is infinite. And this 2400 meter transmission line system, which is a distributed system, however, becomes a lump system as t goes to infinity. At that point, you don't have to think of those transmission lines as transmission lines. While at the initial stages, t equals 0 in its immediate aftermath, what dominates the transmission line are the D'Alembert solutions of the wave equation. As t goes to infinity, what dominates the transmission line is the stuff that we know in ECE. They become just ordinary wires. As ordinary wires, now you can say that load is going to take fully the voltage source U of t, which is 1. Okay, so that's why you're settling down. But you don't go there immediately. You go through this transient period. To get the transient period, you need to do this type of analysis. Any questions? Okay, so what about this thing is a movie? There was a movie of this somewhere. Bouncing sign, unit step, let's see. Here's our first, it's very slow, boring, okay? First bounce. And you're sitting halfway in between, and then you see those things passing you by and changing your state there. Second bounce. The second bounce came with a minus 1 reflection coefficient, so it was not very interesting. Third one. And soon enough, the bounces will be so small that you will not be sort of noticing them, and you say, hey, this has settled down, etc. Okay, so you get the drift of it. Changes are now coming smaller and smaller, and everything is settling down at all positions on the transmission line, in fact, to the same value of 1 volts. All right, so let's go back. And then, I think for the very same circuit, but having a different input signal, double pulse. Let's look at this. Here's the shape. I created a weird pulse. Now this is pristine. Boom, it hits. And it does really weird stuff, okay? But that is what happens. And then you will see that it's really, really, really weird. But that's the way it goes. Okay? Now, this came out from my equations. I couldn't have foreseen it. But once you have the right equations, you know, then there is tendency in these types of results to surprise. You know, not only did I come up with the equations, I also coded this damn thing, and I was very excited to see what it was going to look like. It was truly surprising, right? So that's how it is. That's how computer programs are. You write a code for some purpose, but then for other purposes, they give really interesting sort of things that you did not predict. They get their own life for you. Okay, so that's that. And then, going to back to our notes. So after this example, okay, so I'm talking here about the DC analysis application. And here it was. This I'm not going to go through example number 3, but it was using the very same impulse response sequence. And the signal input is shown, that funny thing. And then you saw the movie of how things are going around. Okay, so in computer circuitry with very short signals, you will have signals if they are not perfectly matched, and there will be effects like this one going all the time. So those of you who are computer engineers, you say, hey, why am I taking all this stuff? It gives you some idea of things that you have to recognize or at least mitigate or deal with. Okay, any questions? So that's it for this bounce diagram examples, and you will get more fun with them in the homework. So most of my bounce diagrams I construct in terms of voltages. I get the impulse response for the voltage, and then convolve. If current is asked, I still do voltage, but then every term that is traveling backwards, I negate its sign, and I also divide the whole thing by Zeta. That gives me the corresponding impulse response for the current, if I want to calculate current, and then I convolve that guy with the input function. That's how I do these things. All right, so what about the next lecture? The next lecture says, well, what if instead of a single canonical transmission line circuit, you have something like that is patches? You have two transmission lines side by side. How do you deal with this? Well, you sort of like apply the same principles, but now you have more junctions to worry about. Every time a transmission line changes into a different transmission line, you have a junction. At each junction, there can be reflections and there can be transmission, and you deal with them the same way we dealt. You declare some transmission coefficient and reflection coefficient every time you come along and produce bounce diagrams and proceed with that. Okay, so bounce diagram with a graphical sort of a thing that it is, clearly, in a logical sense, generalizes to more complicated problems of this type. Okay? In this example, I do have a second segment of transmission line where the characteristic impedance is twice the reflection characteristic impedance of the first line. And that is matched to the final load. Because it is matched to the final load, whatever is injected into the second section hits the load and gets terminated there. It doesn't reflect anymore. If it did reflect anymore, this would be a more messy type of a bounce diagram. Then you would have to consider here, and then some of it would be passed into here, and some of it would be reflected. You can imagine that it would be get really messy, okay? So I promise you that if I give you something like this, I will make it so that it's not super messy, something like this, okay? But of course, in your own private time, you should be able to even work out the messy ones. There is no question that it is an easy sort of thing, although in an exam pressure situation, I can see you making some errors, okay? Any questions here? So what do we think is the reflection coefficient here? What is going on here? Well, if we analyze here by requiring the voltages from segment 1 to be the same as the voltage in segment 2, right where they join, and also the current running on segment 1 line entering into the segment 2 so that the two currents are compatible with one another, I get two algebraic equations, and I can solve those two algebraic equations for reflection and transmission coefficients, okay? The reflection coefficient turns out to be something that you would intuitively feel. What do you think it is? It is the impedance that you see minus the impedance that you are riding on divided by the sum. And 1 plus that becomes the transmission coefficient, okay? And if you're going backwards, it's the same thing, okay? Suppose that this guy reflected. There was not a perfect absorption here, but a reflection. Then it was coming in this direction. And then there would be another reflection coefficient and another transmission coefficient. That reflection coefficient here would be Z1 minus Z2 divided by the sum. 1 plus that would be the transmission coefficient into that region. That's just how things work out, okay? And so here it is, sort of like the generic form of the reflection and transmission coefficients. It's just the way they work. And I think maybe I have a justification here. Yeah, verification here, okay? If you can read this, I'm writing this in a slightly different fashion, but it all amounts to having voltages from both sides to be equal to voltages. The voltages match and the currents match, basically. Let's look at this one. This is another interesting one. In this case, not only do we have a junction, but we also have a shunt resistance. How is this going to change things? So let's work out the coefficients in this case. Since this is a little bit more complicated, I think doing this will amount to having proven the other one. I don't want to prove the other one. So basically, let's look at, maybe I don't have to draw it. Let's pay attention to the what we have here. Okay. What I have written here is, what do you think this is? V plus minus V minus divided by Z1. What do you think that stands for? I that is riding on this one. You can see that. Okay? Now this one has V plus plus, okay? Now I have to invent some new language. V plus and V minus corresponds to forward going and backward going voltage waves on this line. And evidently I selected V plus plus to denote the voltage on this one, okay? On this one, there is no return yet because I have my return coming from this end and that's gonna take longer time. At the instant where I'm doing my matching, I have two signals here, the incident and the reflected one, and only the injected one here. And this is the ease with which, when you do the analysis in terms of delta functions, you don't have to worry about other signals. Delta function comes at an instant. And when it is hitting, it's going to immediately generate its own reflection and its own injected or the transmitted component. And those are the only things that you have to worry about, okay? So that is why you do the analysis with delta function, if you will. Okay? So this is one current, this is the other current. Okay? Those currents, do they have to match? Akash, do they have to be the same?
No.
Because some current can come down here. Okay? So this is a little bit more complicated. If that resistance wasn't there, then those two currents would have matched, and setting that algebraic equation would have led to the reflection coefficient formula that we had here. Here it's going to be slightly different, okay? And what about these two terms? This is self-evident. V plus plus is the voltage at the junction on the second transmission line, and V plus plus V minus is the total voltage on the first transmission line at the junction point. I don't need a minus sign here. The fact that I have a plus sign here causes this minus sign. Is this all clear? And Alex, now, does V plus plus V minus has to be equal to V plus plus? The currents didn't match because there had to be a current coming down the resistor. But how about the voltages? Say yes. Yes, say yes. Because those are two different ways of referring to that resistor voltage. That resistor has a voltage, and you can express that resistor's voltage either as V plus plus or V plus plus V minus, they are the same thing. Those two have to be the same. And what about the current that goes down that resistor? I can write it down easily as V plus plus divided by R, correct? So that's that current. So now I have my basically two equations and I can solve it for their coefficients. Let's see how I wrote those equations. They're there. The equation on the left is just expressing the resistor voltage in two different fashions. One in the language of the voltages in transmission line, number one, the other in terms of transmission line, number two, okay? And then the second algebraic equation has on the left-hand side the current on line number one. Okay, that current splits and becomes the current in line number two and also current down the drain, down the resistor. Okay, so that is equal to this term, which is, because it is division by R, it is the resistor current, and this is the current that is traveling, continuing on the upper wire of the transmission line. Is that making sense, Alex?
Yes.
So here are my two equations, two unknowns. Okay. Anyway, I simplify them, and at the end, I get something that makes sense as follows. I have a formula for the reflection coefficient in terms of a Z equivalent. Okay, that Z equivalent is not Z2, okay? We might have said reflection coefficient is Z2 minus Z1 divided by the sum. But no, that's not true. That would have been the case had there been no this resistance. Having this resistance makes the region that you're going to bounce from to be different from a pure second transmission line. Not only the surge impedance of the second line matters, but also the shunt resistance. And they seem to be connected in parallel. I can represent everything to the right of this resistor in terms of another resistor that is in parallel to R, that would be Z2, for the moment in which this reflection is taking place. And therefore, the equivalent is just the parallel combinations of this, okay? So basically that, without even doing this analysis, I could have said Z2 is in parallel with R, I will take that equivalent impedance and I will make that be the basis of my reflection coefficient calculation, which is Z equivalent minus Z1 divided by the sum. That would have been it, okay? And that plus one would have been the injection coefficient going in the second line. Any questions here? Yes?
For the homework and the exercise that's mentioned in this lecture, we're given a parallel resistor.
This is shunt. You have a series.
Series.
Series, not parallel. Series, yes. Okay.
Now, when I made my own.
So I want to make the following recommendation in this problem. Please solve this problem the way we solved the previous problem. Okay. So you have here this current and this current. Now, is this current going to match this current, Alex?
Yes.
Yes. So that's going to be one of your algebraic equations. Then you have this voltage and this voltage. Are they going to match?
No.
No, because there is a voltage drop there. So therefore, right, this voltage is equal to this voltage plus this voltage. And this voltage is R times simply this quantity. So solve then those two equations for your reflection and transmission coefficients, okay? Transmission coefficient, by definition, is V plus plus divided by V plus. Reflection coefficient is, by definition, V minus divided by V plus. Okay? So now, this is one way of doing this. But then, the second way of doing it is sort of summarized here in the margin. So basically, while previously our shunt resistor was taken to be in parallel with the surge impedance of the line, now we see them to be in series. Therefore, you can have a reflection coefficient for this problem using a Z equivalent, which is a series of. Any questions? Yes.
It's when I work out these KVC and KCF.
KVL. Okay.
When I work out these equations, I end up with a transmission.
Which is not going to be, so
it's not going to be the same as.
No, it's not going to be 1 plus this time because the topology has changed, okay? You will have 1 plus the reflection coefficient modified in some sense. And that modification, if you think about this, is very sensible, a multiplication by a division, voltage division factor. Okay? So the voltage, it's as if the 1 plus the reflection coefficient gives you this voltage, but you want this voltage. So then you take that one and multiply it with this impedance divided by the sum, voltage division, and that's what you get. Okay?
So
basically, you always trust what you do with algebra, okay? Of course, you can make algebraic mistakes, but if you don't make algebraic mistakes, you get the right result. If you don't do algebra and approach it intuition, sometimes intuition can, you know, cause troubles. You can sometimes have the wrong intuition. So you should do the algebra. However, the algebraic result then, when you look at it, should make sense with respect to your intuition, okay? So then you interpret, this is the algebraic result I get. My injection, my transmission coefficient is 1 plus the reflection coefficient times this factor. What is this factor looking like? Then you say, I recognize that factor is looking like a voltage division factor. And it makes sense. It makes sense. Because not everything that seems to be going in this direction is going to be this voltage. Part of it is going to be taken over by this resistance. And thus, you need a voltage division sort of a thing. Thank you. You did everything. And then you hesitate about your results, but looks like you got the right thing. Any questions about? Yes?
So the reflection takes good before the resistance.
The reflection is, by definition, Akash, V minus divided by V plus. When I answer your questions that way, there is no ambiguity. I'm saying yes. Okay? But there is a world, there are two worlds here. Locally here, I have a world of a lumped circuit. But right here and right here, I have distributed circuits. Okay? It is because of that two-world situation there, I am being careful in answering before, after. I agree with you, but I am putting in more precise term. Reflection coefficient, by definition, is V minus divided by V plus. And that has a meaning only on the first transmission line. That is the only place where V plus and V minus are defined. And V plus plus is only defined in the second one. Yes, you have another question.
When we're dealing with multiple transmission lines, this doesn't affect how we would calculate the transmission or reflection coefficients for the generator and the load, right? Right? Or
right now, there is a generator somewhere and there is a load somewhere. I have focused on, I am taking a microscope and looking at what's going on at every junction. Okay? I know that my source and my load are separated from me not only by distance, but also by time. If I am careful in doing all this mental calculation in terms of delta functions, because delta functions are localized, okay, as a delta function is just doing whatever it's doing here, okay, nothing is happening on the load end or on the generator end that is correlated with that particular delta function. So I can forget about what's happening there, okay? But this is only true with this type of analysis for impulse response calculations. Later, when we look at continuous signal, co-sinusoidal steady state, everything will be related in some sense. Things that are even far away are going to have an impact here. With a delay, of course, but that delay is going to be a phase factor. Okay, even delayed signals are the same signals that you are considering locally. They are all different copies, different shifted copies of sines and cosines. So everything becomes phase-oriented, and if you're going to think phase-oriented, you better do it in the complex domain, in the phasor domain. And we will do that starting maybe in one lecture or so. Any questions? So that's it for my treatment of bounce diagrams. Have fun in the homework. So, next lecture. Okay, so we're going to talk about now, before transiting from the world of these transients and bounce diagrams into the world of continuous sinusoidal steady state, we're going to go through a day or so of discussion of microwave resonators. Okay, this has both the aspects of time domain and a little bit of cosinusoidal. We will see how these things join. Okay, I start there with an sort of an analogy. In the world of lumped circuits, I can have a circuit, an idealized circuit, consisting of a capacitor and an inductor, no source, but still some activity. But this will only happen at a single frequency. And that frequency, if you remember, is omega naught, that is equal to 1 over square root of LC. Okay? That's the resonant frequency that we encounter in ECE 210. And then we recognize that resonance phenomenon to be of some importance, okay? Either a parallel or series connected pair of inductors and capacitors could be used in filter circuits with omega naught, the corresponding resonant frequency, playing some sort of an important role, okay? In fact, if we have a series combination of an inductor and capacitor, this behaves as a short at omega naught, is equal to 1 over LC. Short means that a current can pass through this combo without invoking any voltage. The voltage from one end to the other end is equal to zero. Okay, of course I'm talking about cosinusoidal voltage, okay? Because I'm talking about the frequency. Now, I'm saying there can be a zero AC voltage from one end to the other end, despite the fact that I have a cosinusoidal current that is flowing. Why is that? Because the voltage across here exactly cancels the voltage across there. You remember this, short for series. Short for series. On the other hand, if I were to combine the same inductor with the same capacitor in parallel fashion, okay, and I were to place a voltage across this at the same frequency omega naught, 1 over square root of LC, okay, I have a voltage, but how much current is going through? Do you guys remember it? Zero, yes, it is an open, okay? Short for series, open for parallel. So this behavior of LC circuits, either in series or in parallel form, were utilized in various ways in our filter circuits, okay? So that's nice, but here is the interesting news. While lumped elements like this, an inductor and a capacitor, will exhibit a single resonance only, if you take a segment of transmission line of some length, it is going to have infinite number of resonance frequencies similar to this. Okay, so this is what we want to examine. In fact, a transmission line with two opens on each side, or a transmission line with two shorts on either side, will have the same set of infinite number of resonant frequencies, in which they are going to be these transmissions. What I mean by resonant frequency means frequency at which you will find non-zero oscillating response on the transmission line in voltage and as well as current in the absence of a source. These are source-free oscillations. Now, how did the source-free oscillation of the original LC circuit start? I don't know. Somebody started at T equals 0 with energy in the capacitor, let it go, and then energy went from the capacitor into the inductor and back and forth. That's how it started. How do I get source-free oscillation on a transmission line? I don't know. In the past history of the transmission line, maybe somebody like Professor Kudecki took a 3-volt battery, touched it, and then untouched it, injected a pulse, and that pulse is then bouncing forever between the two things. Remember our first derivation of the idealized bounce diagram? Maybe something like that, okay? Of course, energy has to be there if there is any interesting oscillation. It has to be put there, but once it's there, you don't have to maintain that by having another source as long as the system is dissipation-free, okay? An LC circuit is dissipation-free, therefore, it can sustain these source-free oscillations forever. And even, of course, that oscillation, that sensitivity to the frequency, resonant frequency, omega naught, is an important thing, even in real system in which there is a little bit of dissipation. Even in a RLC circuit, the square root of LC plays an important role. In that system, of course, if you have a source-free situation, the signal will not last forever. It will be dissipated inside the resistors. And even though you may start with some oscillation, it will go away. All right. So, in parallel to all those concepts, we are now going to examine what happens on a transmission line with both sides open. Any questions? And then what happens on a transmission line with both sides shorted? And then a transmission line, one side shorted, one side left open. These are all interesting things, and they actually have filtering consequences. Let me give you a filtering consequence as an example to motivate this discussion, and then we'll jump into the discussion itself. Suppose that I have a sinusoidal voltage source here, and suppose I have a resistor. If I connect it to the resistor directly, of course there is nothing in the circuit, it's very easy, but I'm going to do something a little bit weird. I'm going to connect the circuit, or I'm going to connect to the circuit a new element. This element appears to have two terminals which are attached to the lump circuit, but itself is a transmission line. We have an L-long transmission line. Okay? It is an ideal transmission line, let's say, in this application. So it has some resonances, okay? And its resonances include those frequencies at which this point looks like an open. When you look in, you have infinite impedance, in which case there is going to be no current. Therefore, the entire voltage is going to appear here. Therefore, no voltage across the load. This is our R sub L. And then there are another infinite set of frequencies in which, okay, this whole thing behaves as if it's a short, okay? No voltage, okay? And sort of like current comes in here, okay, and current comes out there, and you may say, how? There is no connection. Well, you know, capacitors can behave like that, right? So in AC situation, that certainly is possible, okay? So there are the presence of other important frequencies, selected frequencies, resonant frequencies, at which it looks like a short here. If this is a short here, the entire voltage will appear here. So then, this behavior of that at this input terminals, we have impedances going from 0 to infinity, 0 to infinity, back and forth, with everything in between, creates an interesting sort of a filter that has multiple resonances, countless resonances, some sort of a comb filter, as we will see in some examples as we are getting down the line. Okay, so a short stop of transmission line, a length of transmission line, we call it a stop. We want to study these stops, stops that are open circuited on one end, or short circuited on the other end, or both ends. That's what we want to study. Any questions here? And of course, this acting perhaps like an inductor or perhaps as a capacitor should not be so foreign given our discussions of coaxes as inductors and capacitors earlier down the semester. It all depends on the length, we will find out. It depends on the length and the wavelength. Wavelength depends on frequency, so any given stop of some length is going to have sometimes capacitive, sometimes inductive input impedances also going through zeros and infinities. This is something that we need to learn. Any questions? All right, so let's continue. Low battery, 10%. I think we can survive with 10%. All right, so this is the problem I want to solve. The problem I want to solve is given here. I start with a transmission line that is open on both ends. Okay? So my early discussion of the bounce diagram, where I brought the 3-volt battery excited in left, gave us a pulse traveling. That pulse went, reflected, back, forth, back, forth, forever. That, if you think about it, is a periodic signal. Okay? So these types of unsourced stops can support unsourced periodic signals because there is no way to dissipate things. So we are going to focus on periodic signals. I want to say the most general things I can say about the periodic signals that can exist on a stop like this, because that is going to give me a handle on all the resonant frequencies, it will turn out, that is associated with something like that. For that purpose, okay, I start thinking about how will I write the overall voltage and the current on this line in most general senses, in most general ways. Well, the answer must be D'Alembert, okay? I can write a forward and backward going waves, and then if I sum them up, I can decide that is corresponding to my voltage. And if I difference them and divide it by Z0, and that would be my model for the current, according to stuff that we learned. So, in view of all that, okay, I am saying that I of Zt, for that open stop, open on both ends, should be something like this. I am compatible with telegrapher's equation if I claim this to be true. Some function f and another function g, okay? Function f is representing for us forward propagating wave, so it is t minus zv. This guy is representing a backward going wave, t plus z over v. And division by z naught turns it from voltages, I assume these are voltages, so division by z naught takes me into amperes, and minus sign gives me the right directionality that we have learned about. Any questions? So why did I focus on current? I focused on current because having a transmission line stub with open on both ends, the pertinent boundary conditions are for currents. But an open is saying something very specific about the current there. If you have an open, current has to be equal to zero. It says nothing about voltage. Okay, at an open, there will be some voltage. I don't know what it is. It depends at the level of excitation. Maybe it is zero too, or it can be anything else. So nothing specific is said about an open about voltages, but something very specific about currents. So since I started this exercise with two sides open, I started also my story with currents. Any questions here? So then, I say, let me evaluate this expression at z equals 0, okay? Then it becomes like this because z terms disappear. But at z equals 0, my current is always equal to 0. Okay, then I have to write this here. Okay? So basically, my I of ZT is defined. Here's my z-axis, 0, L, and I of 0T is equal to 0. That's one pertinent boundary condition. The other pertinent boundary condition is I of LT is equal to 0. So by imposing these two boundary conditions, I'm going to get some handle on the problem that I have to solve. Any questions here? So this first equation, imposing the boundary condition at z equal to 0, effectively tells me that function g of t is equal to function f of t. That's what it says. Right, Alex? Right, David?
Yeah.
Say that's why that is right. What was the question? The question was, this equation implies f equals g. That's because this is equal to 0. All right, so now we can replace this g with f. Now what's the second equation? Now I'm going to apply my boundary condition at the other end, okay? So I have to have this guy also equal to 0, all right? So I'm going to replace this by f, okay? And then do some thinking. So this has to be also true, okay? That means that this is true. I effectively shift this time. If you wish, I call this t prime. Then I replace this by t prime, okay? And then I drop the primes. F of t is equal to f of t plus 2l over b. If a function like this, a very general function, is equal to its delayed copy, what does that mean about that function? It's period. And it is with period, 2l over b. But this 12 over b is the full travel time. Okay, so this is really some little bit math here. This little bit math is not consistent with our intuition. That was exactly what we were getting, right? Our signal, the bouncing delta function, was periodic with this period. Now we are seeing that it doesn't have to be a delta function. Any function is going to be like this. Okay, we have a periodic f of t that partakes in the expression of voltage and current on the line, and we are focusing here on the current, that function f, that has to go onto the two sides, two expressions there, because g is also equal to f. I can stick any periodic function there, all right? But the period has to be fixed. It is the travel time, the round-trip travel time of this transmission line. Any questions? So let's continue. Now, since I know my f of t is periodic, I can say some very general statement about f of t. It has to be expressible as a Fourier series. Okay? I know the period, and I'm going to now stick into my expression for the current Fourier series representations of f of t. This will give me most general periodic signals that can be existing on a stuff like that. One example of which was a delta function, but there are others. Okay? So now we are going for the others. All right? So, and for some reason, I opted, as I wrote my notes here, in this form of Fourier series. As you know, Fourier series can be written in, what did we call this in EC210? Compact trigonometric form. So maybe a DC term, plus then all infinite number of AC terms, which are integer multiples of some frequency omega naught, that omega naught is 2 pi over t, and t is the round trip travel time. Okay, some phase shift, some amplitude. Is this all making sense? Okay, so and here are the periods. Period is 2L over V, and fundamental frequency is 2 pi over T. You can write it as pi V over L, if you wish. Am I running out of time? This is an important derivation. So let me stop here. We are running out of time. You guys can do the homework. I want you to watch this while you are fresh, at the beginning of the lecture rather than at the end. Okay, thank you.